Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Welcome to Interchange. My name is Robert Shull. My guest this evening is Jeff Lewis. Jeff, welcome to Interchange.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity for being here. Thank you for having me.
All right. The reason I invited you to be on Interchange is that you have an unusual variety of interests. And it's not just casual interests. You're an interesting person. You cut hair, you do stand-up comedy, you design board games, and you teach martial arts. That's just to name a few.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, you are a barber. That's where you spend most of your time. But it's not just a job with you. You own your own shop.
Yes.
Are you a good barber?
I like to think so. I've been doing this for 28 years. I'd hate to think that I wasn't finally proficient at something after 28 years of doing it. I've moved to Bloomington here in 1985, started working at the College Mall barbershop with Bob Walker. I worked in the Indiana Memorial Union from 1987 to 1997, and I am current owner of Bloomington Barbershop, located out on East 3rd Street out in Edwards Square.
Yeah. Did you ever consider becoming a woman's hairdresser?
No, I can't really ever say that I did. I knew that the opportunity was out there, but, you know, barbering, you know, hey, that's just a slice of Americana right there. I mean, barbers, old school, and this is from a guy, you know, I shave my head now, but, you know, this is coming from a guy who used to wear my hair past my shoulders, and, you know, I could have been like, I looked like I was like in an 80s rock band, and here I am being a barber.
Something that belongs in Woodstock.
Could have been. I would have tried.
Okay. Well, you must hear some pretty interesting stuff.
You hear about everything under the sun. It's amazing what people will tell you. When you snap a little cape around their neck and their head sticks out of this hole, it's like this void in this confessional, and people just start spewing things out to you. It is truly incredible what people will tell you.
You got any stories?
I've got a lot of stories.
Anything you can share?
Oh, no. What happens in the barbershop stays in the barbershop. And not only barbershop, it's about telling stories and jokes and cutting up with the guys and having fun, but it's also a matter of trust. So I don't repeat a lot of things that people tell me in confidence, but you do hear some interesting things. But, yeah, I can tell you a story in particular, if you like.
There's
something that happened in there. You know, I used to have a guy that that worked with me. He's been deceased here for about a year, and he'd been a heavy smoker, and he was cutting this little boy's hair. And the barber, he had a real rough voice, kind of sounded like Wolfman Jack, if you know what I'm saying. And the little boy looked at him and said, "How did your voice get to sound like that?" And the guy said, "Takes a lot of money to get a voice like this, kid." And the whole shop just lost it. You know, the guy didn't miss a beat, and those are just kind of the fun little moments of things that happen.
Now, barbering is one thing. Owning your own shop must come with a lot of headaches and challenges.
Oh, there's certainly challenges with that. But after a while, you know, you don't even realize that your challenges, because you just wake up and it's what you do. Okay, I've got X, Y, and Z to do today. I've got to take out the trash. I have to mop the shop. You know, I have to show up and be there on time. You know, it's just little things. It's just like running a household. You know, I've been doing it for so long. It's just second nature to me.
Mm-hmm. And you can make a profit with it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's not a bad career choice if somebody, a young person who decides they don't want to go to college and become a professor or a policeman, barbering is a perfectly good career choice.
Absolutely. Because for one, you know, hair isn't going to quit growing. And if things happen to where people's hair isn't growing anymore, you know, if there's some kind of, you know, God forbid, a nuclear holocaust or something like that, you know, then you're not going to have to worry about cutting hair anyways. But today's market, you know, it's tough to find jobs for a lot of people out there. And being self-employed is a way that you can ensure yourself income. Obviously, I've been essentially self-employed for, you know, 28 years.
All right. And your wife was perfectly going along with you to getting your own shop?
Well, she better have been, because I already had it when I met her. Hey, it's a package deal. You got to take it whether you like it or not. And my wife's uncles were actually barbers here in Bloomington.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have styles changed over the years that you've been barbering?
Oh, yeah, styles have changed. They come and they go. Back in the 80s, it was the part the hair in the middle, feather it back. Then come the late 80s, early 90s, the flat top was really big campus. Suddenly, all these guys, they want flat tops. And then it swung back to guys wanting to look like they're in the Army with shaved heads, super high and tight.
So haircuts. You shave heads, too, if they want it?
Oh, sure. We can take that down. And then it's gone all the way back to guys wearing their hair long again and then backing off. I've seen stuff come and go at least two or three times.
Yeah. So what's the... what was I going to ask you? Oh, yeah, you ever do black hair?
I've cut every kind of hair on the planet.
Is that more difficult?
I can't say that it is. It's just different. I mean, yeah. it's just a different style.
You see some really elegant black hairstyles, like on the basketball court.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah. There's a lot of work that you can do with, with ethnic hair that you can't do with Caucasian hair, particularly when it comes to design work. I've seen some just incredible artists out there that do work with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, now, Jeff, besides cutting hair, you spend a lot of time teaching martial arts, right?
Yes, we do. I'm a part owner of Lee's Martial Arts here in Bloomington. And this last Saturday,
where is that?
We're at 3822 West 3rd Street. We're out there next to Big Lots and behind the new CVS right there at Curry Pike. And this last Saturday, we just had our third annual open house. We've had an expanded facility with some new floor mats and some new mirrors. It was really well attended. So we're really happy with what we've got going on out there.
Who all do you teach?
Well, we have special classes for kids. We have women's self-defense classes.
How young?
We usually start them about age six. Age six for kids to come in there. Once they've been in kindergarten and they've been going to school, they're starting to understand a little bit more about structure. And a lot of times that's why the parents bring their kids in there, so they can learn some self-discipline, and they can earn some self-respect, and they can, they can feel confident. And that's important.
How about girls?
I think girls, in martial arts, are usually ahead of the boys when they come in, because girls' coordination usually comes on much, much quicker. And I think it's really empowering for these young ladies to come in and practice and to be confident and to practice it for themselves.
Yeah. So you say they get self-discipline out of it?
Certainly. Absolutely.
Is that the main thing?
Well, kids that practice martial arts are less likely to bully or be bullied. They get better grades in school. They're going to learn focus, and they learn a regime, and they're going to be more respectful about themselves and their parents and to other people around them. That's what we teach. We don't allow people to be our first rule is respect, and we don't allow them to disrespect other students or instructors or their parents.
So it's still the Asian concept of bowing and
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. That's taught to us in the traditional way, and I think it's great, because you show respect for yourself and your other people around you, you're going to receive respect. Everybody wants to be respected, and there's not hardly a worse feeling that I think all of us can relate to at one time or another. Every one of us has been disrespected, and it doesn't feel good.
Is there any likelihood that some of the older kids will become overconfident and get themselves into serious trouble? Think they're bigger or stronger than they really are.
Sometimes those things happen, but that's not something that you would really want to focus on. If they're overconfident, they were overconfident before they started.
Mm-hmm.
So we always try to, humility. We always try to teach them humility, so that way that doesn't happen.
Okay. Now, one of the things you see and on TV, when you see martial arts being taught, is breaking a board. What's the value in being able to break a 1x8?
Well, what it shows, it's a practice of technique. Some of those boards are tough. Have you ever broken a board?
No.
Okay. If you're doing three hands and foot, it's to show that you have the proper technique. Some of those boards are heavy and real sappy, and sometimes you have to really blast them. And if you can do a proper technique on a board, if you can break a heavy board, you can break a bone. Yeah. You know, it's to show that you have proper form and technique.
Let me see your hands there, Jeff. You got big hands, but I don't see a big callus where the cutting edge there.
I hit soft things with hard things and hard things with soft things.
Okay, good.
And it rubs the lotion on its skin.
All right. What kinds of martial arts are you proficient at? You know, there's karate, taekwondo, judo, tai chi, aikido, jiu-jitsu. That's just to name a few.
I've practiced taekwondo and hapkido for over 20 years each.
Those are Korean?
Those are both, exactly, yeah. Both are Korean styles.
The difference is?
Taekwondo is a very straight linear art. It's fashioned by its high kicks and dramatic spinning kicks and a preset arrangement of forms that simulate multiple attackers coming at them from various angles. The Japanese may call them katas, but in Korean they would just simply call it your form. And you learn for each belt rank, you're going to have to learn various forms and be proficient at them. Mm-hmm. On your journey, and Hapkido is a circular art where it means the way of coordinated power. So you want to use your opponent's energy against them.
Okay,
you know, that involves joint locks, escaping from various holds, submission techniques. It also has all the kicks and strikes of Taekwondo, but all the kicks are below the belt, where Taekwondo's kicks would be above the belt.
So you try and break a kneecap or something like that.
Exactly. You know. Mm-hmm. And plus, when you get older like I am too, you don't have to kick very high. So, you know, so keep it down low. Plus, the higher you kick, the less power you have. So the lower your kicks are, the stronger they're going to be.
Uh-huh. Looks like it would be harder to defend as well.
Oh, it certainly can be. And, you know, you can take the knees out or a groin shot, you know, foot or ankle sweep. You know, it's not something that somebody's going to see as readily.
Well, now, if somebody wanted to learn a martial art, not for the sport or the discipline, but just as self-defense, mm-hmm. Would you have a program, a recommendation for them?
Well, it depends on what they want to get out of that. You know, if it depends on what situations they feel that they might be in. I would definitely say you want to learn something that you can strike with your hands, and definitely you want to find something that you can learn to grapple with, how to put someone else in a submission hold and how to get out of one. You know, knowing each is equally important. You know, one of the things is that we always try to teach too is, you know, to learn your verbal skills, have your verbal skills down, so that way you don't become a victim or a target, and that way you can avoid confrontation, so you don't have to use any physical skills.
I think that is so neat.
Well, thank you.
You go to a martial arts school and learn verbal skills.
It helps us, absolutely. Martial arts is for the thinker. It's not for the person who's the big brawny guy who's going to go out there and kick, or gal who's going to go out there and kick everybody's butt and everything. It's for the people that are out there that are thinking. And, you know, there's a lot of smart people out there.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally you're going to get the big brute, but, you know, hey, that happens. But they're more of a dime a dozen type than the people out there that are the thinker types that are going to go out there and be dedicated and do what it takes to keep achieving it.
Yeah. Now, we were talking earlier about the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. I find was interesting. And you pointed out that if you're down on the ground, on your back, you have four limbs to work with, like a cat will do. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
And so there's that art form.
You know, when you're looking at the Brazilian, if people are not familiar with that, when they would look at a fight in the ring, they're thinking, well, that guy's on top of him. He's just beating the tar out of the guy. Oh, no, it's usually quite the opposite. The guy on the bottom can just use his back legs to help him with his joint locks and his submissions. The other guy can only use his feet to steady him. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes the guy on top wins. You know, we've seen that. But, you know, like mixed martial arts and Brazilian jiu-jitsu have really, really been in the media for a number of years here, and it's really become mainstream.
Are there any movies that you could recommend for somebody who wanted to see martial arts used?
You know,
well, I mean, I just suspect that the Karate Kid wasn't a really good look at what karate,
you know,
is.
There's always Hollywood that's out there. You know,
Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee was the, you know, hey, right there, man, that's the crown jewel right there of martial arts movies. I mean, the guy is, you know, he's the pinnacle. I mean, he was the real deal. He could do it all. I mean, if you want to see martial arts, you know, Bruce Lee's right there. But obviously, it's Hollywood and it's scripted, and you know, have a lot of people that are doing stunt actors. But, no, there's some really good stuff that's out there.
And I believe I saw an advertisement once or a story on maybe the morning news about teaching old people how to use their canes for self-defense.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things to think about, there's various types of canes. You have some canes out there that are very smooth, but they have a special cane that's a hexagonal cane. And with the hex canes, particularly for those that learn, I say, a cane defense, those are great for grappling and applying joint locks and pressure, because with those very fine, small edges on a hex cane that looks very unassuming, you can do a lot of damage to people and make people comply.
Interesting.
Oh, yes. About pressure points, you know, you can put a lot of pressure in a very small place and make someone comply very quickly.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's see. You spend most of your time in the barbershop.
But, yes.
You have, four classes per week or something like that?
Yeah, I teach four classes a week. I teach Mondays at Lee's Martial Arts. I teach a Hapkido and a Taekwondo class. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'm also the martial arts coordinator for the YMCA. And I teach a kids class from six to 12, yes.
Oh, okay.
So YMCA is a great organization.
Yeah. Now, you're part owner of this school.
Lee's Martial Arts, yes.
And who's your partner? Is he... Is he also a martial arts?
You know, there's five other owners, and all of them were students who came up through the school, so they're all martial artists. They're not somebody who's just trying to get in it for the money.
So everybody brings a little something different to the program.
Oh, absolutely. Just having just various years and knowledge and skill levels. That we have with our owners and some of our instructors that we have. There's some people that, like myself, I've been there for over 20 years. We have some people that are teaching that have been black belts for only maybe 2 or 3 years.
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds to me like this is more a labor of love than it is a way to make money.
Oh, you have to love it. If you don't enjoy doing it, you know, why would you bother? For me, it's a matter of you never, as an instructor, you never know who you're going to reach, particularly with kids. You know, I see some, even with adults, some people, they struggle, they may get frustrated, but sometimes with some people, you never know who you'll reach and who's going to stick with it, because it gets hard. I mean, after a while, it's tough. Everybody hits a wall. I hit it. You know, everyone gets there. You're thinking, man, do I really want to keep doing this? Because your body can really take a beating in it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really not for the faint of heart. You've got to want to do it and be dedicated and just keep showing up. But I really take a lot of pleasure in helping other people help themselves.
Do you have any students that have really, you know, going to contest, have shined
Absolutely. There's some
bring home trophies and all.
There's a circuit here through Central Indiana. They have some tournaments over in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, Evansville, and Indianapolis. Whenever our students have gone there, some of our people have always won trophies. We have always made an excellent showing. One of our instructors, she teaches a forms class, and she's been involved since she was...
What do you mean, a forms class?
Well, it was just some of the Taekwondo forms, some of the prearranged movements from having to fight multiple attackers. And if she doesn't win first place, we're always surprised. I think there's one time she got a second place instead of grand champion, but the wife who won was the wife of one of the judges. So, you know, you can read into that what you will, but she's outstanding.
Yeah. So how big an area do you compete with? National or just Indiana?
It's Indiana, but they have what they call nationals here. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's people coming in from like Ohio, Kentucky, and other. It's kind of the Midwest.
Is it a good spectator sport?
It can be if you have an interest in it. You know, mm-hmm. if you enjoy the sport and you enjoy watching it, I would certainly say it's a good spectator sport.
Yeah. So where do you go from here?
With regards to
the school and your own personal development there.
You just stay with it. You never know who's going to walk in your door. You never know what opportunity is going to knock. You know, you just go in there and you just show up. You know, I always worry about the people who are there, not to worry about the people who aren't there. You know, I'm going to show up there every Monday, and you know, walk through my door, try it. Now, the hardest part about martial arts is saying I want to do this, I want to try, and walking through that door is that first step.
Well, you've had a number of things that you've gotten involved in that take a lot of courage. I don't know which is more, the martial arts or what topic we'll get into next is stand-up comedy.
Oh, thanks.
We've got to be one of the biggest challenges to bravery.
It's all challenging.
Okay. We're going to take a one-minute break here now, and when we return, I want to learn more about stand-up comedy. This is Interchange. This is Robert Shull talking with Jeff Lewis. Jeff, you did some stand-up comedy. You've done some, right?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
All right. That has to take a lot of courage to stand up in front of people for 5, 10, 15 minutes and entertain them.
You know, it absolutely does. And anybody that, you know, I dare you to try it, you know. But I jumped out there and I loved it. I started, you know, I've been thinking about it for a little bit of time.
Now, you've been a cut-up for most of your life,
yes,
right?
Yes, I have. I've always been the class, you know, a little bit of a class clown. Me and my friends are always, you know, I'm always joking, laughing, smiling, and, you know, pulling a few tricks here and there. You know, that's just my personality.
And you've got to see the humor in the human condition.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, people that do comedy, they're observers, and they watch the people, and they talk about the things that they see around them, and sometimes it's a matter of putting oneself or others in a juxtaposition of the situation.
So how do you go about putting a routine together? Where do you start?
Well, you know, I write all the time. I keep a notebook handy.
What do you mean you write? You write
write the jokes. I write jokes? A journal. You know, it could be a conversation I have with someone in my barbershop. Maybe it could be something I read on the internet, something I saw on television, something that inspires me to think, oh, well, this could be funny, or if I could flip and turn this story this way.
Okay.
You know, someone may find it interesting and entertaining.
So writing is an essential way that you work.
Oh, very much so, yes.
All right. How about remembering it once you get it? Isn't it kind of hard sometimes to remember where you go next?
Well, yeah. For me, I don't rehearse a whole lot. I hope that doesn't show. But it's just a matter of knowing what it, you know. For me, I write it all out. For me, a typical situation is I'll type it out as if I was to say it, mm-hmm. and that seems to help. And just, you know, make yourself a little cue card that you can have, that you can look at it, and you can have your bullet points that you can hit on that, and just be free flown and just go with it.
I have to admire these people who can get up and do an hour.
Oh yeah,
I mean, that's just mind-boggling.
A lot of that, I think, is they're just up there. They're being themselves, and they ad lib, and they just go with the flow. You just never know how an audience is going to react to things, it takes a tremendous amount of courage and talent to go up there and say, you know, here I am. I'm on. You're literally on an island.
Yeah. Do you take on? You've seen people who take on a certain persona. They maybe the beat down person is just everything's always falling on their heads and stuff. Do you ever take on a persona?
You know, sometimes, but most of the time I'm just being myself. I'm just here. I am. But you know, you may imitate, use a funny little voice, you know, for a certain persona,
yeah.
And so forth. But most of the time it's just being myself, and you can escalate or de-escalate depending on your situation.
What about body language? Does that play a big role?
I think so. You don't want to look like a shrinking violin. Get up there on that stage and own it. Say, here I am. You know, love it or leave it. It's like America, baby.
And what topics do you find fertile ground in?
You know, for myself, you know, I talk about relationships, and you try to find things that that people can identify with. One of the things I do in a roundabout way that I focus on is ignorance. And sometimes it's my own. I'm just glad this conversation today wasn't some kind of intervention of some kind when I came down here. I'm glad to know that I'm actually here. But, it's very interesting. You know, we can all identify.
Okay, give me an example of ignorance about what, for example.
Ignorance. Okay, there's this. You know, I have this routine where this guy, he falls in love with that he meets this beautiful woman on the internet, but he brings her over here to this country, he falls in love with her. He's madly in love with her, but comes to find out that it's a guy. It's a lady boy, you know, but he's madly in love with her, but he's in love with this person. He just doesn't realize that he's in love with this person. And it's not a gender thing. Somebody said, well, that might be anti-gay or anything. Like, I'm saying, actually, it would be not. He's in love with a person because he's not identifying with that. It shows that you can love anybody, that you don't necessarily have a choice in that. Mm-hmm. And he was ignorant to that fact.
Yeah. Is there any topics that you feel are sort of off limits?
You know, if you're going to a comedy club, and anything's on. If whatever you want to talk about, when people go up to a comedy show, you should be ready to hear anything. Don't go in there and go, well, I'm offended by that. Well, that's just too bad. You know, you're just going to have to lighten up.
Yeah, yeah. You're familiar with Louis C.K.
Oh, yeah, I love Louis C.K. He's a riot.
Anything that he doesn't deal with.
No, he hits it all, man. He's all over the spectrum for that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Louis C.K. is really good. I mean, he's just smart and just right on.
Any other favorites?
I like Jim Jefferies. He's an Australian comic.
Is he current now?
He has been. He was on HBO here maybe a year ago where he had his own special. He's been around here for a little while.
Jim Jefferies.
Yeah. You know, I grew up watching, you know, Richard Pryor, George Carlin. You know, we had Richard Pryor records in the neighborhood. We'd all gather around and listen to. You know, love Robin Williams. You know, he's just bouncing and frantic over the
Robert
place.
Robin Williams is just a dynamo.
He is on fire, yeah, man. Yeah. And since he's broke off more into acting, you really get to see him more who he is. I mean, mm-hmm. he's really good. He's really, really dynamic.
Yeah. Now, you take somebody like George Carlin. The mood he presents is he's just absolutely astounded that anybody could be so blatantly ignorant or this is so stupid.
Yeah.
That's a lot of indignation and total shock and surprise that things can be like this.
You know, one of the great lines that I remember from George Carlin, I believe that he said that, you know, think of, you know, a person you know with average intelligence. Now, just realize that half the people you know are dumber than that.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of Garrison Keillor saying, you know, where all the kids are above average.
Yeah, 50%.
How about foul language, the F word that rhymes with duck? Has that sort of become standard, almost mandatory in stand-up comedy now?
I wouldn't say so. It depends on the situation that the comic, you know, what it is that they're trying to project. It's just some people, it depends on that person's style that they have. I wouldn't say that it's mandatory. Some people will automatically laugh. Say some people might go, well, I'm offended because they said that F-bomb word. You know, let's get out of here, honey. You know, but I mean, well, I don't think it's necessarily they have to be, but it just depends on the comic and whatever it is they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Who's the guy that had the family show, the black comedian?
Bill Cosby?
Cosby, yeah. He's just as straightforward and family-oriented.
Absolutely.
As can be. But, and I guess his deals a lot with our naivete.
Yes, yeah. I grew up watching I was a fan of Bill Cosby when I was a kid growing up. I always watched Fat Albert growing up, and I, you know, and the show always had a lesson. You know, it was funny and it was cute, but you know, But some of the things with comedy, here if I may, there's a limestonefest.com.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Limestone Comedy Festival coming up June 6th.
Limestonefest.com.
Limestonefest.com, June 6th through 8th, right here in Bloomington. There are going to be over 200 comics here in Bloomington, some locally, some national acts. It's going to be huge. So
more than one venue?
Yes, multiple venues. I'm not sure of all of the current venues. I'm sure the Comedy Attic is going to be there. I think the Buskirk Chumley, and I think some of the rooms over at the Waldron will be used. And there may be another venue in town, too, that I'm not aware of. And also, right now, starting next Wednesday, the 5th Annual Bloomington Comedy Festival runs May 22nd through August, I believe, 1st or 21st. I apologize for the date, but it started, and you can check that out at thecomedyattic.com.
And for those of you who missed that, and for those of you who you want to tell about this, you can, all of our shows are podcasts.
Okay.
About 24 hours after live broadcast.
Okay.
So you can get on there and hear the whole program again. Does your wife think you're funny?
Well, I think, you know, seriously, I had her laughing right up the first day I met her. You know, if you can't make a woman laugh, just forget it. The laughter, that's the key to her heart right there. No, who wants to be dull and boring?
Okay. Do you ever get any MC gigs?
You know, I was the MC at Lee's Martial Arts Open House here this last weekend, and I really had a nice time with that. I have not specifically been asked to be an MC, but I would gladly entertain the idea. If anybody's looking for that, you know, just shoot me an email, bloomingtonbarbershop.com.
Say that again now?
bloomingtonbarbershop@yahoo.com. One word.
Okay, that's good. How about hecklers?
Yeah, they hecklers think they want to be part of the show, but nobody walked in a comedy club and going, you know what? I can't wait for this guy over here to start heckling that guy on the stage. It interferes with the show. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Just don't do it. It's just really bad taste.
But there are some comedians who make a specialty out of shooting down hecklers, right?
Oh yeah, well, because it's usually very easy to carve up the stupid out there. Because why would you open up your mouth to a guy with a microphone, you know, who's an expert and this is what he does for a living? I mean, they're asking to be humiliated.
Mm-hmm. And how about in your barbershop? Do you hear a lot of good jokes in there?
Oh, you hear some. You know, some are.
Do you probably tell your clients? I tell
some here and there, but not a whole lot. Most of the time, I'm catching up on, you know, because I find people interesting. I want to know what's going on with their lives. How their job doing, their wife or their kids. You know, if they have those kinds of things. Also, another skill I'd say about being a barber is learning when people don't want to talk, when somebody just wants to sit there and be quiet and have that, you know, 15 or 20 minutes to themselves where they don't have to do anything. They can just relax and go with it.
Sounds like kind of a bartender skill.
Very much so. You know, bartenders, barbers, and taxi drivers are the only ones who really know what's going on in this world.
Well, now, I've seen a show on TV, the Confidential Taxi or something like that.
Oh, taxi Cab Confessions.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
You need to put a...
barbershop Confessions?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know about that, man. I want to keep a level of trust with my people, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I think it's funny, you know. But you know, most of the people that get in these taxis are really intoxicated. But most of the people that come to me are sober.
Well, you don't know how many hundreds or tens of guests that either say no way, I don't give you permission to use that.
Oh yeah.
Or they're just not interesting enough. So but they show us the.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I wonder if they almost tell them, say, hey, you're on, you know, the Taxi Cab Confessions. You know, I want you guys live it up a little bit back here. But most of it, you know, it's just, you're looking and going, really? I'm like, man, I'm glad they don't live next door to me. You know, not in my neighborhood.
Yeah. How about joke writing? You say you write. You write more as a developmental exercise,
mm-hmm.
to see what you can make out of a topic or a
certainly
thing. Have you ever written jokes for another comedian?
No, I haven't. I've talked with a couple other people. We've shot a few ideas around about how to you know, how could this be funny? What could we do? You know, what kind of situation can we put this context in that, you know, that people could be relate to? I've done a little bit of that, but I haven't done any actual writing for somebody else, though.
Well, it seems like all the major talk show hosts have joke writers.
Oh, those are professional. Those guys are professional writers. Yeah. And you know, everybody is looking at the teleprompter. You know, whatever host it is that's hosting one of the late night shows, sometimes they ad lib, and other times they've got people that's writing the stuff for them. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. There's a pretty big difference between, say, Jay Leno and who's the opposite him?
Conan O'Brien, I guess. I don't know. I don't watch talk shows at night.
Yeah.
So.
And you find that Jay Leno tends to concentrate on the news of mm-hmm. the day and just rattles off without any segues, which I find a little off-putting, you know, just one topic after another one. But I think well, of course, he doesn't have time to develop a routine, but if you have a professional that develops a routine, why, segues are so important, aren't they?
Sure,
you
certainly.
Just gotta, and then coming back to a joke you made earlier.
No, I believe, you know, I can stand to be corrected on this, but I believe Jay Leno did comedy before he did, before he was a TV host. I believe. I think that was some of his past that he's done.
Yeah. And
no, that's just kind of his style. That's kind of way he wants to roll with it. So
yeah. And have you ever seen Ferguson?
I'm not familiar with him.
Ferguson. He had a late show.
I remember Morton Downey Jr. because he just used to smoke cigarettes and just blow smoke in the other people's face and tell them what an awful human being they were. that was Jerry Springer before it was Jerry Springer.
Uh huh.
You know, that was those people on that show were just rabid.
Yeah. And how about comedy in television, not stand-up so much, as series? Are there any series that you particularly think are funny?
I enjoyed Seinfeld. Enjoyed Seinfeld. That was really smart and very clever. The show, it's a show about
four
nothing.
Extremely talented,
absolutely
comedian actors.
Yeah. Growing up, I watched a lot of MASH. Yeah. MASH had a lot of situational comedy. It revolved around a very serious situation and circumstances, but they always found the humor in the moment. And I think
that's genius.
I think for me, for myself, I relate to that very much, because am I going to laugh or am I going to cry? I'd rather much be laughing about a situation than sitting around crying about it. Here's a situation for you. Here is 2 weeks ago, I dislocated a finger in my martial arts class. I didn't cry about it. I laughed, and I reset it and put it back in place.
Wow.
Yeah, it hurt.
Well, I'm just thinking of a show. I liked the one that took place in a bar. Ted
Cheers.
Benson. Cheers.
Yeah, Cheers was really good.
I thought those characters were so well developed.
No, they were very developed. And some of them I thought were very stereotypical that you might see in
well,
just
you
a
knew
regular
what to
small.
Expect. Certain kind of humor to expect from each other.
Absolutely. And there was enough people that kind of that wove in and out of there with just some of the situations that happened.
Yeah. But now there's The New Girl, and there's what else is there? How I Met Your Mother and The Big Bang Theory, and these were that depend so much on laugh track, it seems.
A lot of that's very true, but most all of them do have that. The Big Bang Theory is really, I've seen a handful of episodes, but you know, it's that celebrated geek culture that's coming out now. It used to be all the geeks were hidden in the closet. You know, people made fun of the Star Trek guys, the Star Wars guys, people that played Dungeons and Dragons. You know, but a lot of that stuff has become mainstream now, and a lot of those guys are the ones who are writing the shows. And I think it's great that they have shown that type of character out there in a very positive light. And you have a lot of brainiac kids out there who do smart, intelligent things, like for particularly with gaming, that you know, they go, hey, I'm not by myself. You know, there's these funny people out here that are out there doing these things.
Yeah.
So I think it's great.
Do you ever listen to This American Life?
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, that's it's not a comedy show, but I was...
A piece of American pop culture that I'm missing.
So. Yeah, it's on public radio. So we're going to take another break here, another one-minute break. And when we return, I'd like to learn something more about your other interests, such as board game designing and basketball. This is Interchange. This is Robert Shull talking with Jeff Lewis. Jeff, I hear that you design board games.
I have. Yeah, I've been working on designing board games. I've loved board games, card games, ever since I was a young kid. I thank my mother and my brother for my love of gaming that I have. I've been designing games here now for about 5 years. And I mean, it's very challenging. It's a lot of work.
Wouldn't it be nice if you came up with a winner like Monopoly or...
You know, sometimes to get a winner, you just got to be lucky. Monopoly came out during the Great Depression, and everybody had a chance to be their own millionaires when a millionaire was actually a millionaire. Now a millionaire is like about a 100,000-aire. But, you know, I enjoy designing the games because I want to see people happy.
Yeah.
And get some fun out of one of my creations.
But can physical board games these days make it big in the day of the video game?
Oh, I think so. You can make a board game and it can translate into the video arena. There's a lot of online gaming that happens. But there's some board games out there that have some really nice print runs that are very successful.
Can you give me an example?
You know, one of the games out there would be Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is a game. It's a worker game. And people have various choices that they have to make, and a lot of people really like that one. There's another one that's very similar to that. Would be Agricola, that has gone very well. There's a card-driven game that has been hugely successful. Magic the Gathering. It was launched in 1993, and it just exploded. And there's been some other collectible card games that have come out that are taking the gaming world by storm, and it changed how board gaming and card games are presented.
Well, now. Looks to me like a major difference between an electronic game and a board game.
Well, certainly.
Is that the number of people that can get involved face-to-face or they can enjoy each other's company.
Certainly.
And a board game, that's the essence of it. It's a relationship sort of thing.
That's what I enjoy. I have played some video games. I'm not a big video game player. I've played some over the years. But having the camaraderie and having that face-to-face time with your friends or family sitting around the table, you know, you're joking, you're having fun, you're eating pizza, you're rolling dice, you know, you're moving your pieces around, and you're just trying to beat the crap out of the other guy at the table with whatever the rules allow you to do, depending on the game that you're playing, and to try and convince people to do other things against other players. You know, I really live for the player interaction, which is, you know, a lot of fun. You know, you just can't beat that face-to-face time, you know, pushing little pieces of cardboard and plastic around.
Yeah, we have simple games that don't take very long, like something four, where you put checkers in slots. And,
I don't have
Otello, but then you have more extensive games like Monopoly or Farm, something or other.
Yeah, the games I play, you know, that I'm interested in playing is, you know, when people think of board games, a lot of people think automatically of, say, Monopoly.
With the dice.
And dice. You know, for me, the board games are much deeper, more involved, more decision-based games. I enjoy a lot of historical games that would, say, simulate maybe World War I, World War II. You can pick a side. You can have multiple players in that. And they can be very deep lessons in mathematics and trying to be, and being a number cruncher and about strategy. It's not just rolling dice and being lucky.
You like Stratego?
Stratego is nice. I prefer chess, but the things that I would play would be are much more much deeper than say Stratego. Although that's something that people would be very common with.
Okay, good.
There's a company called GMT Games. If you, I think it.
GMT.
GMT, like
Greenwich Mean Time.
Yes, exactly, and they have a lot of historical games that. That are extremely interesting. They're card based.
They all battles or
a lot of them are. You know, they're turn based games, and they have victory points conditions. You can fight, say, the Napoleonic Russian Wars, if you like. Mm. You can fight medieval battles. You know, it's just a time period and things that you're interested in.
Yeah. Have you ever played How to Host a Murder?
I have
some
not.
Some of those are very historical.
Oh, certainly. Some of those are very good. Those kind of things usually fall under what people would call LARPing or live action role playing, where a person assumes the identity of a character and people act and they interact between one another. And you basically may have a set of rules in your pocket. Or there might be a game master that wanders around from room to room. People go to hotels and conventions for these types of things. Indianapolis hosts the world's best 4 days in gaming. It's called Gen Con. If you go to gencon.com, yeah. They come to Indianapolis every year. If you have any kind of interest in gaming, you'll find it there. Have you shown there? Oh, yeah. I've debuted my games and designs that I have. There are at Gen Con. I've ran some of my games that I've designed. I've ran them as events, and I submit my admissions to Gen Con, and they approve or deny. They've always approved, and I run my games as events so people can come and play the games that I've designed, so that way I can see what's working, what isn't working within a game, and I can get feedback from these people here. So I continue to work and develop my games. It was a great place for that. I actually have a game in a contest right now through Gen Con. If I'm approved with through this committee, there's an opportunity that I can demo my game in front of a production company, and if I win, you know, I'd be one of the lucky winners. They'll publish my game and they'll box it and they'll give me a booth to sell my game next year.
How neat.
So we're holding out a little bit of hope. I'm thinking, hey, why shouldn't I win? You know, what I've got is pretty good.
So how many games have you actually designed?
I'm at about five or six right now. Mm-hmm. About five or six. And sometimes they morph. They may be in one place. They may be in another. It's just always finding that right game mechanic. And I like games that have... They're decision based. They're not luck based. You know, it's like, oh, he rolled a six. I didn't roll the dice very well. But it's all based on your decisions, and everybody else is at the table, and then you interact and work from there. And those I think make for the best ones.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can see that. So when you decide you're going to start a new game, what do? You start with a principle, a skill, a teaching goal. How do you start?
You know, I find something that would be interesting. You know, I've got a game that's in the works right now. You know, it's like a prison break game. I say, let's say you have five players, and each player is a guard, and he has to guard a barracks, and there's prisoners within the barracks. But each other person has a character that's a prisoner in the barracks, so everybody is guarding each other.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you can see how some of the dynamics can play. Like you and I might have a character together over in player C's bunkhouse, but I also have a character in another one of yours and yours in one of mine. So we're working together over here, but working against each other somewhere else. You know, so those are the types of decisions.
Deliciously complex.
Exactly. So it's a matter of who's telling who is what.
Yeah. You know. And then you have to run this by real people to see if it remains interesting and challenging without being too confusing.
Exactly. You want the game to be fun. You want players to play the game. You want it to be fun and go, wow, that was really good. I can't wait to do it again. One of the telltale signs I have when I introduce a game to people, if they lean in towards the table, their body language says, I'm into it. You know, if they're sitting back and they're twiddling their thumbs or staring off in space, you know, you've got a dud. But when people sit up and they're paying attention to what other people are doing within the game, they're already plotting what they're going to do. So,
I bet you're a good poker player, too.
No, I'm terrible.
Oh, really?
And if anybody would care to invite me over and take my money at any time, you know where to find me. I'm a sucker.
You have a tell. I'm sorry. No, when you said you watch their body language, that tells me that you're an observer of human behavior.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what I do all day long.
Uh-huh. So do you have some people around here in Bloomington that help you test the game?
Oh, absolutely. I've got a great group of friends that I've been friends with for many years who have all been gamers. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of a general term that were always willing to play whatever kind of madness I throw out in front of them. Mm-hmm. And I have another friend of mine in the group. He also does a little bit of game design and so forth. We play his works of art and we all help each other navigate, you know, what works, what doesn't work. So the feedback's always good, whether it's good or bad, or it could be deemed negative. That's always a positive thing, because then you can fix it. Because you don't want to hang on to this. This is my baby. This is the way it's going to be. I'm not changing anything. You've got to be flexible and listen to what people are telling you, and then make adjustments from that.
Yeah. Well, certainly hope you come up with some winners there.
I love it. I mean, it's time consuming. It takes a lot of thought.
Develop a game that you're proud of. It's another when other people are.
Oh yeah, I've got a couple right now that I could under the right circumstances I could put it in a box and get it on a shelf down here. I feel that strongly about it. I've got some other people that feel the same way.
Well, when you go to this Gen Con,
GENCON.
And you take your board with or cards and pieces and is this all professionally printed stuff that you've had printed up, or is this some of it hand drawn or
so some of it is handcrafted, some of it is I have had some things professionally printed and done. The convention draws, I think last year they drew around 35,000 people from all over the world there. Some of it is a little rough. But I'm not there to sell them. I'm just there to play it.
Mm, okay.
There's a difference in that. It's like, what I have works. It looks good. It looks sharp. It's just a matter of having professionals do it in a mass, production facility. We're going to be able to do it a lot better.
And then do you take some time to go around and look at other people's games?
Oh, absolutely. You always keep an eye on what's out there. I have so many friends that have so many different varying degrees of interest in gaming. So I listen to what it is they're talking about. Say, I played this game. This looks really good. Or, we should play it over here. And I have friends all over the country because I meet them at these conventions, and we can bounce emails and so forth back and forth. So I know some other game designers out there that are well known.
So you stay very busy.
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to, before we end up here, I want to make sure that you tell me a little bit about what role basketball has played in your life.
I grew up in Knightstown, Indiana. That's in southeast Henry County, where I grew up playing against this kid from Newcastle, Indiana, by the name of Steve Alford, since eighth grade, who wasn't too bad.
A familiar
name.
Yeah,
he wasn't too bad. I hear he had great hair.
All right.
But playing basketball and growing up in a small town in Indiana, when you're playing, you're not quite a realize it at the time, but you can look back as an adult and go, wow, people really looked up to you. You represented that community. Basketball in a small town in Indiana, it's very tribal. You're out there representing an entire community. But when you're young, you don't always realize that. But when you're at school, when you win, the people would always want to high five you in the hallway. It made you feel really good, because there was a lot of school spirit there, particularly in the smaller schools.
How many students were in your school?
I graduated with 132 kids.
Okay, that's medium size, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're 2A. I think it's 2A. It's smallish.
Yeah.
It's not like Bloomington North or Bloomington South here that have 350, 400.
You were on the varsity.
Absolutely.
And did you starter most games?
I started about half the games as a junior. Yeah. The senior class in front of me was really talent-laden. It was probably the most talented class that had probably ever came through the school from the top seven or eight players that they had. And I started all the games as a senior, I except for one. I think I was coming off an illness, so I didn't get to start that game.
Well, you said you were 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
You look bigger. but then
I'm wider now.
People look smaller when they get out there in the court nowadays with so many tall players. Well, but you must have been reasonably tall.
Usually one of the taller guys on the court. I think the tallest player I ever played against was maybe 6'9", 6'10". When you're 17, 18 years old, everybody's pretty skinny, mm-hmm. For the most part. People haven't really filled out into that young man's body that they're going to have in the next 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see these players on television, you know, a lot of them look real thin and lean. But, hey, you go up there and look at some of those professional athletes up close, man, they're chiseled out of granite. These dudes, you know, they're monsters out there.
Yeah.
I stood next to Ron Artest. You know, I think he's called Meta World Peace now or something to that fact. And, you know, he was standing off the court. And I just kind of stood up next to him real quick just to see how you measured up. And, you know, he's 4 inches taller than me, probably 6 inches wider at the shoulder. And it looked like he's just carved out of granite. You know, I mean, the dude is a beast.
Yeah. Well, you're pretty good in your senior year, right?
I think I did okay. I played center.
Mm-hmm.
I think I averaged maybe 14 points, 8 rebounds a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think maybe blocked 5 shots a game, something like that.
I
got freakishly long arms.
I'd heard a rumor that you actually were one of the first people to dunk the ball in Indiana high school.
I wouldn't say in Indiana. At my high school, I was one of the first ones to dunk in some time. Another interesting note about Nicetown, Indiana, the Hoosier gym was right across the street from my house growing up as a kid. So the gym that was used in the movie Hoosiers, I've played in my entire life.
That's a beautiful piece of history.
I love it. It is a great gymnasium. If you're ever passing through Nicetown, Indiana, get off the interstate and get out there and go see it. You'll be glad you did.
Oh, my golly.
I mean, it's an incredible place. It truly is. It's magic.
Well, we're not going to have time to get into some of the topics that I want to talk about, like cooking. I understand you're a pretty good cook.
I love to cook. I mean, I can whip it up.
Yeah. Do you do Chinese, for example?
I can do it all. Chinese, American.
Thai?
Thai, absolutely. Love Thai.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Maybe you write a cookbook one of these days.
Well, I guess I do that all the time anyway. I really enjoy cooking. It's therapeutic because, you know, I'm a people pleaser. I like to see people happy and enjoy my creations, whether it's cooking, gaming, teaching, cutting their hair. I enjoy to see people, have a smile on their face from what I'm able to do for them.
Well, I hope that our listeners realize that I have proven to them that you are a most interesting person with an enormous number of skills and talents and interests.
Well, thank you. I appreciated the opportunity to be here.
So thanks for being with us. Thanks to our assistant producer, Louis Malone, for engineering tonight's program. The executive producer is Allison Bechtesh. Our original theme music is by Jamil Effiam. Stay tuned next for Jazz Menagerie, coming up on WFHB.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.